Samayati Jivadharma, Chapter 13, November 24th, 2006.
All Vishnupad Estate Sri Shriman Srila Bhakti Vedanta Narayan Goswami Maharaj, to all of our disciplic succession and all the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna, everybody there in telephone land. Today we're continuing our reading of Jivadharma. And I just made my first mistake. Gurudev said, you should not read. You should not study. You should do anusilanam. Just as he says, you should not chant Hare Krishna. You should not eat or take prasadam. You should serve prasadam and honor prasadam. And how to do that is a class in and of itself. And you should not chant Hare Krishna. You should serve Hare Krishna. That is, meditate on the prayers and qualities and pastimes and serve them through Nam, which is a very high thing. And similarly, he said you shouldn't read or study, but you should do anusilanam. Anusilanam means continual cultivation of activities in relation to Krishna or service to Krishna. So whatever looks like reading should be actually an effort, continual effort, to meet Krishna and his associates and serve them. For example, Gurudev said to pray before reading, quote-unquote reading. O Diksha Gurudev, and the name, O Shiksha Gurudev. And then you go up the line of the disciplic succession. And then six Goswamis and your associates. O Mahaprabhu and your associates. O Radha and Krishna and your associates. And ultimately Yoga Maya, who is the complete embodiment of all of Krishna's pastimes. You are all my Shiksha Gurus. And you are sitting here right next to me. So as I'm beginning this reading, I pray to you to please bring me into the deepest understanding of what I'm about to read or what I'm reading, so that I can come out the other end as a maidservant of Radharani and a pure servant of my Guru and Guru Parampara. So, in the general sense, we are continuing our reading of Sri Jivadharma, Chapter 13, Praman and Prameya, which is the Dasamul Shiksha of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. As you remember, Praman is the evidence that is accepted by our Guru Parampara, those who have received the mercy of the Lord and his associates, who are self-realized souls in our Guru Parampara. That evidence which is accepted by them as to what is the absolute truth, beyond which there is no truth. And that evidence is the Vedic literatures. Those Vedic literatures, not all, but those Vedic literatures, like for example, the Puranas are in three modes of natures. There's 36 Puranas, and one third of them are in the mode of ignorance. So those aren't accepted as evidence of what is the absolute truth. If you want to kill an animal, great. Just perform this kind of sacrifice. Of course, there are secrets there that you have to invoke the presence of Vishnu, and you have to whisper into the ear of the animal that now I'm killing you, in your next life you can come back and kill me, so that gradually it gets in my head, what am I saying? I don't want that. I better stop this. So there are certain Vedic literatures which are accepted by a group parampara, and those are called praman. And those pramans establish the pramaya, which is the nine truths, which we've gone over in the last two classes. Briefly, that Hari, or Krishna, Brajendra Nandan, is the absolute truth. Two, he's the reservoir of all potencies, shaktis. He's the reservoir of all relationships. There are two kinds of jivas. One kind is conditioned by maya. One kind is liberated from maya. Both the living entities and this material energy are energies of God, of that Hari, and they are simultaneously one with and different from Him. There is one process and one process alone to reach Him and to reach perfection, and that is called Shuddha Bhakti or pure Bhakti. And the goal of life, that which is meant to be reached, is Priti or Prem, Krishna Prem. And these are the teachings of Sri Gauranga to the faithful jivas. As you remember, Vrajanath is infatuated and obsessed with anything in relation to Gauranga. So he's very eager to hear this. And in fact, after he hears this chapter, you may be interested to know that he's so overwhelmed. I mean, the reason I'm telling you this, what happens at the end of the chapter, we're going to reach the end of the chapter today by the mercy of Guru and Gauranga. So, in the beginning of the next chapter, which discusses the next of the principles of Pramaya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining that Bhajanath, who's hearing from his Gurudev, Paramahamsa Raghunath Das Babaji Mahasaya, he's so overwhelmed, and the impression made in his heart is so great that he's thinking how extraordinary and unparalleled is Gauranga's teachings. Just by hearing them, it thrusts within my heart waves of the ocean of nectar, and the more I hear, the more I'm eager to hear. My heart is never satiated. I always want more and more. So he's showing the example of a perfect hearer. And we may not be on that level, but by seeing the example of a perfect hearer, we can pray to Brajanath, because, as I mentioned, Gurudev said to pray to all these personalities before and during reading for proper understanding. But I did forget to mention, because of one of my four defects as a conditioned soul, that is, I make mistakes. I did forget to mention that we should also pray, Gurudev said we should also pray to the person who is speaking the book that I'm about to read, and the person who's hearing the book. In this case, the person who's hearing is Brajanath, the disciple, and the person who's speaking is Paramahamsa Raghunath Das Babaji Mahasaya, the guru. So I would pray to them also as my Shiksha gurus, and then Gurudev said, also pray to the personalities that the speaker and hearing are talking about and hearing about. So in this case, the subject matter of the discussion is Sri Hari. So then I would also pray to Sri Hari, who is the absolute truth. to put that truth of what's in the book in me and take out all the falsities. So now the part we're up to is, Prajnath has been inquiring, why isn't Nyaya Shastra considered Praman, like direct perception, inference by general experience, inference by circumstance, so many material intelligence and senses, so-called evidences are there in Nyaya Shastra. And Babaji Mahasaya says, because the intelligence and senses can never approach transcendence. And transcendental understanding, the understanding of the spiritual world, is destroyed, actually, by trying to understand it by mundane argument and sense perception. Now, Brajnath, after hearing that, he says, yes, this is very clear. Now, when he says that, this, he's also setting the example of a disciple. He's got it. He's fully understood it, and it's very clear. So, for us, it may not be like that when we hear an answer. Very clear means it entered the heart, and it took its place there. So we may not be like that. Therefore, again, we can pray to Prajnath. You can ask anybody who has something for what you want. Like if I want a stick of incense, I'll ask Rev Lake because I know she's doing the puja. I know she has it. If I want money, I'll go to Anita because she's the treasurer. So if I want something, I have to go to the person who has it. So Brajnath has this quality. Babaji Mahasaya has his qualities. That is, he's a Tattvagya Rasik guru. I want that too. So I can ask him. He has total understanding of this. I want that because I'm unhappy with my own understandings of the world and myself in relation to the world and myself in relation to the absolute truth. So I just ask. And that's how bhakti goes. I serve to show that I want it, to prove that I want it, and at the same time I pray to the right people to get what I want. And I want the right thing, Uttama Bhakti. So that's bhakti. Prabhupada once defined yoga. He said, yoga means to pray to Krishna, I'm fallen, please save me. That's yoga, that's all. So now, without further ado.
Okay. Hey, Will, can you hear okay? Chuchu Krishna Prabhu? You can hear okay?
Without further ado, we'll continue our reading. Brajnath, after asking, why isn't Nyaya Shastra good? Babaji Mahasaya explained, and he said, okay, what's the evidence that Brahma, the impersonal Brahma, is Hari's effulgence? He proved that. Then he asked, what's the evidence that Paramatma is the partial representation? He proved that. And now, he's asking his next question. He says, I understand that Brahma is the part of the bodily body, he's the bodily effulgence. Understand means with some realization. And I understand that Paramatma is his part. But what evidence is there that Bhagavan is that Hari, Bhagavan Krishna is that Hari, and that Hari is the absolute truth? So that's where our reading is continuing from today. So Babaji Mahasaya replies, there's two features of the Supreme Lord. One feature is his Madhurya, and one feature is his Aishwarya. And his Aishwarya feature, he manifests as Lord Narayan, the master of all the Vaikuntha planets, and he has unlimited power. And those powers will be delineated later, because Babaji Mahasaya is going to delineate the 64 qualities of Krishna, 60 of which are had in completeness by Lord Narayan, like he can create innumerable universes and things like that. Millions of universes come from his body. So Lord Narayan is the Lord's manifestation of Aishwarya. And he has another manifestation, which is sweetness, which is his complete feature, Madhurya. And this Madhurya is so replete with all outstanding, unlimited qualities that it completely covers over and defeats the glory of his opulent feature. In terms of tattva, or philosophy, or established truth, there is no difference in tattva between Narayan and Krishna. It's all one tattva of Bhagavan. But in terms of rasa, or the taste, mellow taste of loving exchanges, there's no comparison. In Lord Narayan, there's so much wall, big fat concrete wall, in between the devotee and the Lord. He's so great and I'm so small. And this awe and reverence keeps the person apart. But with Krishna, there's so much madhurya that the relationships expand to, even when it's one is a servant, still Krishna can jump in the lap of that servant and embrace the servant. So it's much more intimate. So in terms of rasa, Krishna is far, far superior. And his madhurya is far, far superior to Aishwarya, which is also included in that madhurya, but more. The example is given by Gurudev of 1 inch of sugar, salt. If you taste that, let's say, not an inch, what's another? Let's say 1 gram. Gram is too small, isn't it? Let's say 100 grams of salt. And that's very salty and nobody could taste it. But if you add 100 grams of sugar to the 100 grams of salt, no, let's say 200 grams of salt, that's more salt, and you add 200 grams of sugar to it. Now, even though there's more salt, it's less salty to the taste. Then suppose you have 400 grams of sugar, salt, and 800 grams of sugar. There's more salt, but still it tastes still less salty. And suppose you have 1,000 grams of salt and 10 billion grams of sugar. There's more salt than previously, but you don't taste it at all. Like when you put salt in a porridge, a sweet porridge, you don't really know that the salt's there. Similarly, there's more opulence in Goloka Vrindavan than there is in Vaikuntha, but it's not at all tasted. Even though Krishna lifted up a mountain with one pinky when he was 7 years old, nobody in Vrindavan thought that he did it. In fact, Mother Yasoda was totally worried about him, that he was going to get squashed. And not only does Balaji Mahasaya establish this by his own words, but the way of Vedic teaching is that one always confirms and supports his view by citing Vedic evidence. Even Krishna does that in the Bhagavad Gita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does that profusely. And here, Babaji Mahasaya is also doing that. He's quoting the Rig Veda. Rig Veda is one of the four initial Vedas from which all other Vedic literatures come. I saw a boy This is in the Rig Veda. I saw a boy who appeared in the dynasty of cowherds. He is infallible and is never annihilated. He wanders on various paths, sometimes near and sometimes very far. Sometimes he is beautifully adorned with varieties of garments, and sometimes he wears cloth of only one color. In this way, he repeatedly exhibits his manifest and unmanifest pastimes. So there's the cowherd boy for you. And then another obvious one, but only obvious to those who have heard from Guru, in the Chandogya Upanishad, which is also one of the Pramans accepted by our Guru Parampara, as Mahasaya Babaji gave a list of the Upanishads to Brajanath of which Upanishads are accepted as evidence and Praman. By rendering seva to Sham, one attains his transcendental abode, which is full of spiritual bliss and astonishing variegated lilas. And within that spiritual world, one attains the shelter of Sham. Then Babaji Mahasaya explains that there's two kinds of things. Sham also means black. So it means devoid of all material qualities. And another word is gora, which means sham, black is devoid of color, and gora, light, golden, is full of all the colors. So the inference there is that one can understand sham by serving gora, and one can understand gora, goranga, by serving sham. And they're both the same person. Other evidences by Babaji Mahasaya to show that Krishna is the Supreme Being, the personality of Krishna. He quotes Srimad Bhagavatam, which he's also established previously in this chapter as Praman, Vedic evidence, because it's the essence of all the Vedas, and the person who manifested the Vedas, Vyasadeva, this is his final work. And you all know the story about how Narada inspired him to manifest Srimad Bhagavatam, which isn't even his work. It's Bhagavan Vani. It's the words of God himself, because it's Samadhi Bhasha. That means it was written in his samadhi, or spoken, or realized in his samadhi. Samadhi bhasha means it's the bhasha, or explanation, that comes from his trance, but it's given by Krishna. Bhagavatam is the swarup, or form of Krishna himself. Ete chaṁ śakalā puṁsaṁ Krishna stu bhagavan svayam. Rama, Nisringa, and the other avatars are all portions, or plenary portions, of the Supreme Personality, Sri Bhagavan, but Krishna is the original Bhagavan himself. That's another Praman. So you can see that first Praman is established. What is Praman? And then the Prameya is established by that Praman. And that's exactly what Babaji Mahasaya is doing. Then he quotes the Gita as well. Matak Parat Matak parataram nanyat kinchit asti dananjaya. O Arjuna, there's nothing superior to me. I'm the absolute truth. Everything is resting on me as pearls are hung on a thread. So whenever you're worried about anything, just remember this and take shelter and be happy. That's the implication. Then another from Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Sri Krishna is the all-pervasive. Okay, here comes. Listen very carefully, because here comes another thing that is creating a very important question in Brajanath after he hears this evidence. Sri Krishna is the all-pervasive, non-dual, Parabrahma, who controls everything. He's the only worshipable object for all the demigods, for mankind, and for all other life forms. Although he is one, through his achintya shakti, or inconceivable power, he manifests many forms and performs many varieties of lila. Just like a chameleon. You know what a chameleon is? It's like a little kind of a, like a, it's like a little teeny weeny reptile. And it's one, but it changes colors. All the time it's changing colors. It's one. That is, this example is given in Gita by Prabhupada. So, he's all-pervasive, non-dual, one, but expanded into many forms. Now, Rajanath asks another question by that. Well, on one hand, you say that he has a form, a medium-sized form, in fact, but how can he be all-pervading and unlimited if he has a form? This goes completely out of the realm of logic. If he has a form, he must also be under the modes of nature. How could he be independent? He's limited by his own beginning and end, top and bottom, side and side. And how could he have absolute authority? Because if he has a medium-sized form, look how much there is outside of him. Like with us. I'm here, but there's so much more outside of me than there is inside of me. So how do you reconcile this? So Babaji Mahasaya replied that the reason that you're asking this question, my son, see, previously it was stated that he didn't know why, but there was a great upsurge of Vatsalya Bhav in Babaji Mahasaya for Brajanath. So he just loves him to bits as a father would love a son. He said, my dear son, the reason that you're thinking like this is because you're in Maya. Your intelligence is limited by matter. Now, when one uses material intelligence to enter into transcendence, he has to come up with this. He has to impose mayic forms and mayic features on whatever he's speculating about on the spiritual platform, because his mind is only material. When I first met Gurudev in 1992, I told him, I have intellectual understanding of the philosophy, but I don't have any realization. So Gurudev said, intellectual understanding is no understanding. Just like a person who's on the platform of intelligence or the platform of the body, he'll hear that Radha and Krishna walked hand in hand in the forest. And then he'll naturally think, oh, hey, I know what that's like. I used to have a boyfriend, and we used to walk hand in hand. That's it. Got it. So I'm imposing my mayic experiences. Then, after contemplating like that for a while, then I realize, wow, that wasn't quite it, because these forms don't, they're imperfect, and they're full of flaws. So that couldn't be the absolute truth. Oh, yes. The absolute truth then, by logic, must be impersonal. And Prabhupada gives the example that Krishna lifted a hill, he has a form, and he lifted a mountain. I have a form, and I can't lift a mountain. So therefore, the absolute truth must be impersonal, yes. Formless and all-pervading. Otherwise, how could it be all-pervading? So any attempt, Balaji Mahasaya is explaining, any attempt for the conditioned soul to come to the platform of transcendence by the basis of intelligence, first he'll put mayic forms on top of it, and then he'll reject the whole thing and make everything impersonal. He said, whatever you're thinking about is totally unfounded, all these logic and arguments that you're giving. Krishna has so many beautiful qualities, smiling face, lotus eyes, beautiful lotus feet. He bestows peacefulness on his devotees. But these features of Krishna are, because he is the supreme complete power, and he has unlimited powers, therefore it's very easy for him. It's not even a question. It's easy for him to be simultaneously all-pervading beyond time and space. In the material world, that's not possible, but this is not the material world. The material world is only a perverted reflection, like a reflection of a tree in a muddy river. His medium-sized form is the basis of two things, that is form and all-pervasiveness. All-pervasiveness is subordinate, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. You should know that the unlimited eternal Brahman is subordinate to me. I am the basis of that unlimited eternal beyond time and space Brahman. And then he quotes something from the Narada Pancharatra as his evidence. Sri Krishna's transcendental body is composed of eternity, consciousness, and bliss, without even a trace of mundane qualities. He's not subject to material time and space. On the contrary, he exists fully in all places at all times. And the Bhagavatam says that because he exists fully in all places at all times, in all places and all times, one should glorify him. Simultaneously, he's in all places at all times. His form and existence are the embodiment of the absolute non-duality, and that is Advaita Gyan Paratattva, and that's also established by Mahaprabhu in his Sanatana Shiksha. Then he says, in the material world, you know, we imagine that only a formless thing can spread everywhere, like air, like sky. But even air and sky is limited. It's limited within this universe, for example. And it's limited within time and space. Within time. And it's limited within space. Now, the Brahmapura that you read about in the Upanishads, that Brahmapura is not, see, everything depends on whose translation you get. The Brahmapura is not an impersonal place as the absolute goal, but that Brahmapura is Braj, where Krishna displays his astonishing Brajlila. And everything in that place, Araji Bhagavan Brajeshitanayas Tadama Vrindavanam, everything in that place is also unlimited. Every tree is unlimited and all-pervading. It has that power because it's the Dham, and the Dham is none different from Krishna. The rivers, the mountains, the sun, the moon, everything is transcendental and devoid of all material flaws and shortcomings and limitations. It's also, everything is also fully conscious, even a building. I mean, you could say, okay, a tree is conscious because it's life. But even the buildings are conscious. Krishna's flute is conscious. When I was in New Jersey with Prabhupada in 1967, we were sitting on the beach with him. There was only about four of us there, four or five. And right in front of us, some boys were not skin diving, but when you wear the skin suits, the wetsuits, and you surf. So the boys were surfing right in front of us. And Prabhupada said, they think there's some Ananda, but at any moment there could be a big wave and they're finished. So here there is some Ananda, but, and some eternality, but it's like sweet rice mixed with sand. You can't really taste it. So because all the Reflected features of the spiritual world are mixed with the modes of nature that can't be really tasted. But he said, you can't imagine in the spiritual world, even though all the rivers are fully conscious. And then, where are Babaji Mahasaya and Brajnath speaking? They're speaking at Srivasangam. And therefore, Babaji Mahasaya says, even this Navadvip Mayapur that we're sitting in right now, this is non-different from Braj. So it is also all-pervading and unlimited. Vrindavan is everywhere, just that we have a cataract and can't see it. Krishna's abode is everywhere. And Krishna is everywhere. He said, when you get mercy of Vaishnavas, of saints and sadhus, at that time you can see differently. And therefore, throughout our day, throughout our prayers, we always pray, Dekite Dekite, Buliva Bhakave, what is it? Nijastula Parichaya. When will I get mercy and see the spiritual world, which is unlimited and all-pervading and brilliant, and I forget this material body? Then immediately, when Brajanath was hearing all these evidences, he said, yes, there's no doubt about it, you're right. Means his doubts were finished. This is disciple. But still I'd like to know when, where, and how Krishna comes to this limited material world, and how that unlimited Krishna with his unlimited abode fits in this limited space. That's another inconceivable thing about the Lord. So, Babaji Mahasaya thinks like, well, what's the problem? A lot of times we ask Gurudev a question, he says, I never have that question. What's the problem? If Krishna is all-powerful, all-potent, with all potencies, by potencies you can do anything. So it's very easy for him to do that. By the nature of the inconceivable power of God, he can make the impossible possible and the possible impossible, because he's the source of everything. He's the source of the impossible and the source of the possible. So even an electrician can change out hot water into cold water, a cold thing into a hot water, a hot thing, because he knows he's in control of electricity. We can't, it's inconceivable for us. So Krishna can make the impossible possible and the impossible possible and the possible impossible. Everything is possible for him. Back in 1967, my god sister Himavati asked Prabhupada, is God a musician? So Prabhupada's answer was, why not? He's everything. So if God is everything, of course he's a person, of course he's medium size, of course he has to be. Then Brajanath said, yeah, you're right, absolutely right. So how come the materialists can't understand all these things? The people of this world, ordinary people, how come they can't understand the all-pervading nature of Krishna's form and supreme authority of Krishna's form? In fact, Gurudev explained that when we chant our mantras, particularly Gayatri mantras, one of the rules is to be surrendered to the mantra, knowing that there's nothing outside the mantra, because the mantra is is the presiding deity of the mantra himself. Radha Krishna or Mahaprabhu or Guru or the Guru mantra includes Radha and Krishna in there, because it says that he's serving. So they're there too. So everybody who's in the mantra, there's nobody outside of them. There's nothing outside the mantra. What do you mean there's nothing outside the mantra? I'm saying the mantra, but I mean, I look around, there's so many things outside, the mantra's just in my mouth. No. That's our material misconceptions. So to have faith that there's nothing outside the mantra, and therefore no need to worry about anything, or lament about anything, or be concerned about anything, because everything's already there in the mantra. If I just think about the mantra, then everything else gets taken care of. When you have your $100 problem solved, then all of your $10 problems are solved. Would you like $100? Would you like me to give you $100 right now? No thanks, I'd rather work for $10 at a time. Prabhupada said, that's not very intelligent. So why can't the non-devotees understand these things about Krishna? Because all of their senses are imperfect. And whenever they see Krishna's pastimes, they think it's an ordinary person's pastimes, because it's natural for them to impose mayic forms on the spiritual world, because that's all they can think about. But if they receive mercy and start engaging in service, then they also get different kinds of eyes, ears, nose, etc. Atak Sri Krishna Namadi Namaved Grayam Indriyaya. The Supreme Lord's form, name, fame, etc. cannot be understood by material senses. But when one's senses are purified by service, then that reality descends. So I'm going to read, he's asking, well, how does, Brajna's next asking, well, how does the leelas benefit the people of this world? When Krishna comes here and performs his leelas, how does that benefit the people of the world? So Babaji Mahasaya is explaining that even though the non-devotees perceive them as ordinary affairs, still, if they just hear them or have any contact with them, they start getting spiritual merits. And this is the importance of book distribution, which is going to be this group's program in 2 days. Today's Friday, then on Sunday, we'll be going out, and you're all welcome to come, to the town of Govardhan, where there's millions and billions of people, and set up a book table, do a Harinam, and dance around with flowers and distribute books. And Anita and Vasanti, who are well experienced, will train you all, and also Rangadevi, in how to preach in Hindi, how to distribute books in Hindi. So Babaji Mahasaya is explaining, even if somebody thinks of them materially, like Prabhupada writes in the beginning of the Krishna book, I'm sure that everybody's wondering, who is that boy and girl on the cover of this book? Even if you take them as ordinary boy and girl and their affairs that are in the book as ordinary mundane affairs, still you'll benefit. So Babaji Mahasaya is saying the same thing, because Guru is one, that still the leelas will have a power to bestow spiritual Sukritis. And gradually, as these Sukritis amass and you get the right amount, then you get the bonus prize of getting a bona fide guru. And then the whole process continues and develops from Shraddha to Anartha Nivritti, Nistha, and so on up to Prem. And then, when one becomes single-pointed by that process, then he can understand Krishna's leelas. And therefore, we're always praying like that. So then, Brajanath asked, well, how come I believe you, but my confusion is, how come his leelas aren't described everywhere in the Vedas? So Balaji Mahasaya explains, they are described everywhere in the Vedas, but not always directly, sometimes indirectly, and sometimes directly. Like this verse about Shyam that I said means I am Babaji Mahasaya. The verse that I quoted before about Shyam, one who goes to the spiritual world takes shelter of this Shyam, and Shyam has beautiful form and he's all pervading at the same time, and he has wonderful leelas. This Shyam can be misunderstood if one doesn't have the proper guidance, and he's understood as Shyama Sundar, Shri Krishna in Vrindavan, if he has the right guidance of how to understand that verse. So that may be more indirect, but still, Krishna and his pastimes are there. Like Radharani, Gurudev always says, Radharani is described in every verse of the Bhagavatam, but sometimes indirectly and sometimes directly, more directly. Even when Brahma and Paramatma are being glorified in the Vedas, this is also, Babaji Mahasaya says, this is also the glory of Krishna. If you tell me what a beautiful arm I have, that's also my glory. Or that I'm so glowing, that's also my glory. And now comes something very special, which is also described, which we read 38 years ago or so, in, maybe 35 years ago, and it's still there, in Nectar of Devotion. That is the description of Krishna's 64 qualities. Brajanath is asking, well, how come some people worship the demigods? And how does one know why to worship Krishna instead of the demigods? So then, now begins a few pages of beautiful descriptions, not so much descriptions, but delineations of Krishna's 64 qualities. And he describes how the jivas have the first 50, the demigods, like Brahma, Shiva, Indra, have, 50, the first 55, the jivas have the first 50 in minute amount. The demigods have the first 55 in partial amount. Lord Narayan has the first 60 in full amount, and Krishna has all 64. And even though Narayan has the 60 in full, Krishna has the same 60, but more full. Full, complete. Just like Gurudev says, Krishna in Dwarka is Purna, he's complete. Krishna in Mathura is Purnam, and that means more complete. And Krishna in Vrindavan is Purnatam, which means he's totally and fully, completely complete. More than before. So, okay, now we come to Krishna's 64 qualities. And if you read the Nectar of Devotion, you can see examples of those qualities. Examples means pastimes of how Krishna displayed those pastimes. So, I have the book if anybody wants to borrow it. Or if you have computers, it's also on your computer in folio, Nectar of Devotion. So these are the qualities of Krishna. He has unlimited qualities, but they can be broken down for easy digestibility in the 64. He is delightfully charming due to his bodily beauty. And remember a few pages ago, Babaji Mahasaya told Brajanath that Krishna has six opulences: beauty, wealth, strength, fame, renunciation, and beauty, wealth, fame, knowledge. And his beauty is the unksi, it's the complete quality of Krishna and the source of all other qualities. And the other qualities are like compared to the branches of a tree, and the tree includes the branches, and the branches are part of the tree. So Krishna's beauty is the whole tree, and his other qualities, like fame, strength, wealth, are the parts of that whole. Therefore, beauty, the beautiful form is first, the beauty of his form is first. and the charm of his form is first. And Gyan and Vairagya, knowledge and renunciation, are the effulgence of his qualities. So, of course, I don't understand it. They're just words right now, but you will realize it when you become a realized soul. Don't forget. So here's his 64 qualities. He's delightfully charming due to his bodily beauty. 2. He's endowed with all auspicious characteristics. 3. He's attractive. 4. He's radiant. 5. He's strong. 6. He's eternally youthful. And there's so many unlimited pastimes in each of these qualities. And strong. There's so many even rustic, confidential, madhurya pastimes in this strength one. He's eternally youthful. 7. He's conversant with many kinds of astonishing languages, like he talks to the animals and the birdies. 8. He's truthful. 9. He's a pleasing speaker. Eloquent. 10. 11. Learned. 12. Wise. 13. Resourceful. So these qualities are manifest in his Vaikuntha form, his Dwarka form, his Mathura form, but in his Vrindavan form, but and within Vrindavan form in the various rasas, but they're most complete, like his truthfulness, his pleasing speakerness, his wiseness, everything is most complete in his Madhurya ras. 14, he's expert in relishing mellows. 15, he's clever. 16, expert. 17, grateful. 18, very firm in his vows. 19, an astute judge of time, place, and circumstance. When we read Gopi Geet tomorrow, remind me to tell you how the gopis see these qualities. Some of them we'll go over. Very interesting. And his most complete feature of these qualities. 20, a seer through the eyes of Shastras. 21, pure. 22, self-controlled. 23, steady, steadfast. 24, forbearing. 25, forgiving. 26, grave. 27, self-satisfied. And the jivas have all these qualities in minuteness. 28, equal to all. 29, munificent. 30, virtuous. 31, chivalrous. 32, compassionate. 33, respectful to those who are worthy of respect. 34, favorable. 35, modest. And here comes shy. He's also shy. 37, protector of the surrendered souls. 38, happy. 39, the well-wisher of his devotees. 40, he's controlled by love. 41, he's the benefactor of all. 42, mighty. 43, famous. 44, beloved by all. 45, partial to the side of the sadhus. 46, the enchanter of women's minds. 47, all worshipable. 48, all opulent. 49, superior to all. And 50, the controller. So all these above mentioned 50 qualities are present in minuteness in the jiva, the living entity. Now we come to the next five that are present in Krishna. But they're not present in the jiva, but they are partially present in the demigods. 51, he's always situated in his swarup. 52, he's omniscient. 53, he's ever fresh and new. 54, he is the concentrated form. But I'm going to ask Gurudev about this because we know that Guru is omniscient. Of course, he's not a jiva, but he's not a demigod. So I'm going to ask about where the category of his eternal associates who come here to this world, or the jiva who becomes an eternal associate by sadhan siddha, how does he fit in? Because he's always in his swarup too, the associate of Krishna. So I'll ask about that. He's the concentrated form of existence, knowledge, and bliss. And so are we when we're there. But still it says the jiva is not, so I want to ask about that. 55, he is served by all mystic opulences. Actually, the mystic opulences have forms. And they serve him as persons also. Not only do they serve him by the fact that he has them all, it's not just an abstract statement, but they also serve him. And the spiritual powers like beauty, knowledge, fame, strength, they also serve him as persons. Like, you know, they bring him a tray of, they do incense offerings and things like that. They actually serve him as persons. What time is it? Where's my watch? Almost time to end, okay? Just a couple more minutes, because we're almost at the end of the chapter and his qualities. Okay, so those five are partially in the demigods. And then there are five more that are fully in Narayan, that of course are in Krishna. 61. I'm sorry. That's not right. Oh, where am I? Why did it go from 55 to 61? Oh, here we go. Narayan also has these five qualities. He possesses inconceivable potencies. 57. He has innumerable universes are situated within his body. 58. He's the original source or seed of all avatars. He wore 59. Of course, Narayan doesn't. Narayan's the source of, yeah, because Krishna's becoming the avatars through Narayan, actually. 59, he awards mukti to those whom he kills. And 60, he can attract even those who are self-satisfied, self-realized. Satisfied within their own self. And these are the four that are in nobody else but Krishna, Bhujendra Nandan, that Sham. 61, he is like a vast ocean crowded by waves of astonishing and wonderful lila. You won't find that in Vaikuntha. That's what we were reading in Gopi Geet yesterday, right? 62, he is adorned with incomparable Madhurya Prem, and thus is auspiciousness personified for his beloved devotees who have unparalleled prem for him. 63, he attracts the three worlds with a marvelous vibration of his bamboo flute. And 64, the resplendent beauty of his transcendental form is unparalleled, charming, and astonishing to all moving and non-moving beings. So the demigods have to have, Babaji Maharaj is explaining that the demigods have to have some of these qualities, otherwise they can't perform, but not the last four. But they have to have some of the other qualities, in fact, not only the last four, but the last four and five and nine. They wouldn't have. But they have 55 in part, otherwise they couldn't perform their big, vast, universal functions. And sometimes they're also worshipable because they're so powerful, because they're servants of Krishna, because they're doing his work in the universe. They're also partly worshipable by the people here in this world. And some of them, some of the demigods can even give bhakti, pure bhakti. Like Brahma is the top of our sampradaya, and what to speak of him, Lord Shiva is so powerful in bhakti that he can give braj prem and he can make us gopis. And because has so much condensed prem for Krishna, therefore he's also considered non-different from him. And because the Mayavadis don't have proper guidance in reading the scriptures, that's why they worship him as the supreme. Because, you know, you could easily misunderstand when you're reading about Mahadev, about Shankar, because he's non-different from Bhagavad Tattva. But at the same time, he's different, like yogurt and milk. So it's really important to have a good guru and a good guide. And Gaurapriyanandi, Hari Hari Bo, that thus ends the 13th chapter. And next class, which means Tuesday, we'll begin chapter 14, Shakti Tattva, the Prameya, Sunday. Oh.
Friday.
Oh, Sunday for us, Monday, Saturday night for you. Hare Krishna, Achyuta Krishna Prabhu. Yeah.